Good evening, everybody. My name is Christopher Bach, and with me...
And Leanne Elise.
And we are with Humanity Healing University, and we are here this evening to talk about the stellar codes Chiron and Orion, as well as the stellar code Matrix Mastery Program in general. We're going to speak for a little while. We're in presentation mode right now, but as soon as we're done going over the basic codes, we'll be opening the phone lines up for anybody that has a question and would like to ask it.
All right, so let's start with the stellar code for this month. Everybody that knows astrology, the constellation there is in ascending on the month of December is the constellation of Sagittarius. Sagittarius has a very interesting story because it's like every single one of the constellations. It came from the imaginary, the mythology, and the composing of the archetype based on the drawing of the stars in the sky. That was the way that the ancient people saw it and interpreted their influence on them through... you know, the archetype was made through the influence and the myths and the stories and all the initiations and temple were done based on them.
The earliest religions, the earliest teachings they have, look to the stars. This was before we had the solar cults. It was before we had the lunar cults. You know, because the stars were fixed entities and people could plan out their lives and their seasons based on the stars, which isn't necessarily something you can do with the planets, which is what modern astrology focuses on. This is a little bit of an older system.
Yeah, we are guided, and the stellar codes are guided basically what you call the fixed stars. For the ancient people, the planets were the wandering stars. They were not fixed. So, and this was, you know, confirmed when in the Middle Ages they saw that the pattern of Mars was not regular as some of the other planets. But that's beside the point. So let's go back to the constellation of Sagittarius. Sagittarius is what you call a hybrid. A hybrid archetype. He's half man and half horse. It's the symbol in itself, encompasses two different aspects of humanity. The basic instincts, which is the animal part of it, and the from the waist up, the human that wants to aspire divinity. The symbol of Sagittarius in itself is the man, you know, the animal man walking on the planet Earth, but with the head on the clouds. The archer is also a inspiring archetype, even though again it's a hybrid. A lot of people think that on hybrids of beings. They are just from the fantasy land, but in one time in mankind's story, a long time ago, the hybrids were kind of a common type when it starts the experimenting of of beings being put on this earth on Atlantis time. It seems like to the reports we have, they were quite common. So the Sagittarius or the centaur, and you had the mermaids, you have all sorts of beings, you have even the Sphinx, which is one of the symbols as well of this code, and the cherubs itself, which is even though it's known to be angels, they incarnated the four different sacred animals. But going back to the Sagittarius and the centaur, the constellation of Sagittarius is a very old constellation. It's a constellation of actually summertime in the south of the hemisphere. And it's very prominent this time of the year there. It's a sudden constellation, even though we do have on the ellipse, you have this expectation in the northern part. It's preeminent, especially when is ascending. You can see very easy between 8 o'clock at night. You can identify the in the winter time the constellation of Sagittarius on the top of the sky. But the biggest thing about Sagittarius is that you have a myth, actually two myths, because it's a Babylonian constellation in itself and encompasses the warrior, encompasses it has a very martial and Martian influence, you know, the god of war, according to the Babylonians.
And it's interesting, the centaur in the sky in Babylon actually had two faces. One, the man face was facing forward, and a horse face was facing backwards. So it was a hybrid, almost a double hybrid.
Yeah, it was a double face, which is a characteristic of the Caribs in general. Each Carib has two faces. You know, a Carib is the second of the most high qualification of the angels. They usually have two faces and from 4 to 6 wings. And, of course, a wing, when you talk about vibration, a wing in the angel, the amount of numbers of wings means the, you know, to the level they can vibrate higher. So each pair of wings is two dimensions. So you can, when you have one pair of wings, you can vibrate to the fourth dimension. If you have two pair of wings, you can vibrate to the sixth dimension. When you have six pairs of wings, you can vibrate to the 12th dimension.
And on up.
And on and on. But this is another question. But
we'll have to cover that in the angel.
In the angel
in
part.
In the angel part.
But the big aspect is that here, the constellation of Sagittarius, even though we have some kind of dispute, astrological dispute, done between the, where you have the concept of the Babylonians and the Greek. The Greeks did a little mess up on this, and we end up with two constellations that represent the centaurs in the sky. One is the centaur constellation, Centaurus constellation itself, and the other one is Sagittarius.
Now, and for the Greeks, the Sagittarius became not so much a centaur as it became Chiron. And whereas Chiron was half man, half horse, he was not a centaur.
In the stricter sense, in the meaning, he didn't have the, what you call, they didn't have the basic instinct of the centaurs. They were very violent and extremely
aggressive.
But Chiron was exactly the opposite. And because Chiron is a different archetype, and this is one of the why we are working with Chiron, and we prefer to use the basic stars of the Sagittarius that encompasses the energy of Chiron. Chiron is the wounded healer. Chiron is a powerful archetype of healing, of knowledge, and development of wisdom, and personifies the ascension of the human nature from the original animal nature. So Chiron personifies the healing journey that every one of us is performing right now, trying to elevate ourselves from the basic nature to a more divine nature, or I would say a light nature. So the first wounding, why Chiron became the wounded healer. Chiron, mother, and you know, mythologically, he's the son of the god Cronos that saw one of the muses, and he was one day out looking for Zeus because, you know, he had a problem with Zeus, and he decided to eat Zeus. So he was walking around, and then he saw this beautiful muse, and she got scared, and she transformed herself in a mare and ran away. And then he decided to, you know, to pursue her. Therefore, he transformed himself in a stallion.
And chased after her. And forgive me, but I can't help myself. He eventually caught her and amused himself.
Yeah, okay. So anyhow, she got pregnant, and but she knew that was the baby was a immortal, and but she got really horrified when she gave birth. She saw that the baby was not human or a human form. Horrified, she abandoned the baby. So not only counting Kronos that abandoned ever since, you know, since he was subside, he just disappeared. He got abandoned by his mother. Therefore, Kieran's first wounding situation parallels a lot the first wound of every human being that came to incarnation in this planet, which is the wound of separation. The wound of separation of our, you know, the divine source. This is a very deep wound and is a basic, primary, I would say, handicap that most people have to overcome in life and heal in order to be a full human being. And why do I say that? Because with the wound not healed, you always will feel yourself incomplete. You always will feel yourself missing something, disconnected. You may feel that God abandoned me. Look what he's doing. I have no help. And one of the most interesting sub-aspects of this original wounding is the incapability to find your twin flame or your twin soul or your soulmate or a soulmate that will actually complement and facilitate your journey. Why? Because with the original wound, nobody will ever feel this, I would say, this space, this vacancy. And this has to be healed. And you just heal this through a journey of reintegration and reabsorption on your family of light and, you know, to the forgiveness of everything that you actually are doing right now, not vibrating what is not truthfully yours. And we tend to do this. We tend to go through life and accumulate a series of things and get involved in situations that actually were not in our program. But this is another conversation. But let's go back to him. So he incarnates the first wound, primeval or an ancient wound, which is the wound of separation from our divine source. But the story continues. And Kieran continued looking for cures of this abandonment. And his myth, abandoned by the mother and father, in our myth, abandonment, you know, of mother, father, God, which actually did not happen. But Kieran continues, and in his pursuit of finding the cure for his own wounds, he finds, amazingly enough, the ability to heal others in many ways, not only physically, not only spiritually, but, you know, psychologically. Kieran is a perfect archetype of the healer. Why? Because he knows. The perfect healer is not the one that has pity. The perfect healer is the one that has compassion. It's not the one that identifies to you pain for sympathy. Oh my God, you have this, poor you. No, it's somebody that will identify with you and maybe it may help you find your cure because it said, I have been through this and I know what you're feeling.
This is why compassion is so important. It's through this through compassion and through this understanding of the connection between us that you're able to do this.
So, but anyhow, his journey continues, and he became very wise, and many kings and queens and heroes pursued his assistance to learn and perform, initiatic actions like Hercules, for instance.
Hercules did, Jason the Argonauts, Achilles, many of the great big heroes in Greek mythology studied under Kieran.
Well, and, but the second wounding comes, interestingly enough, when by Hercules, that was one of his pupils. Oh, I don't know how to say this word.
Pupils.
In English. Yeah, that one. So
what happened is the one of the other aspects that we teach with the stellar codes and we discuss about on the archetypical journey is a lot of these are set up and done through the 12 labors of Hercules, because this mythology is basically a guidebook to ascension, to how you go from being a man to divinity. And it was through these labors that he reached and understood and made peace with his divine nature. But the fourth of these 12 labors had to do with the giant boar, the Ethmian,
yes,
something like that.
He,
and you know, this was a pretty easy. Now, granted, this was a big pig, and it was tearing up the countryside. But Hercules is Hercules. This is a no problem one for him. He's just going to go there and get the pig. But he decides it's no big deal, so he stops off to, you know, have some wine with a friend of his and a little fun. And the friend happened to be one of the centaurs. And the centaurs, as a general rule, tried to stay away from wine because they got heavily intoxicated, went crazy, and would tear up the countryside. Well, Hercules insisted on popping open a bottle of wine, had some. The centaurs came. There was a big ruckus. And Hercules tried to chase them off by shooting arrows at them. One of the arrows he happened to shoot just happened to hit his friend Chiron and mentor Chiron. And this is when he found out that the arrows, which he had dipped in the blood of the Hydra, were so incredibly poisonous and caused Chiron excruciating pain. Now, this is where the problem comes in. Chiron is immortal. He can't die. At the same time, he has a wound which can't heal.
And it's extremely painful because the blood of the Hydra is it's corrosive and abrasive. He lived a long time with the wound and tried to find again the healing of the wound in itself. And the fun thing is that the Hydra means basically. Did you turn off?
Go ahead.
The blood of the Hydra means basically the bad actions, the bad thoughts, or things that we create that can reproduce. For the ones that study the myth of Hercules knows that the myth of the Hydra, when you cut one head, two other heads come into place, which means you have to really, every time you're cleaning up a path, you have to cauterize it so no lies or not no type of lower vibration will come back. We'll be coming back always in double. And this is a metaphor for what kills Chiron was something that he taught Hercules how to deal with. But, he got poisoned by the same fact or entity or being that he tried to teach how to kill. But going back to this, finally, after a lot of pain and suffering, he decided to sacrifice himself and gave his immortality away and release
Prometheus
from the torture of being eaten, each 2 days, having his liver eaten by
Prometheus was the god or the demigod that gave fire to man, and as punishment to that, Zeus had him changed in the underworld, and an eagle would come, and depending on the myth, every day or every other day would eat his liver, and then he would grow a new one, being immortal. Not really a good fate. But what happened is he was to stay there until another immortal would give up his immortality for Prometheus, in which case Prometheus could go free. Chiron agreed to do this. Prometheus was set free from his crime of giving fire to man, and out of recognition for his sacrifice, Zeus put the constellation Sagittarius in the sky to honor Chiron.
But basically, this is the story of the wounded healer. Now, there's a lot of parallels between the quest for self-healing and the quest for healing others, self-sacrifice, we all know those are roles that we play in and on and off in our lives. And what we're going to do with the stellar code is bring the stellar code energy and the symbols and the strength through the attunement to reintegrate and help heal the original wound. Now, how are we going to do that? You know, for those that are accompanying the university, we have one ebook that's basic in all the ebooks that we have for each one of the stellar codes. It's called The Awakening of the Divine Stars. We are going to do, you could, the attunement itself and the initiation has a lot to do with alchemy of our divine stars, integrating those codes in our physical body, but basically our goal is to integrate those codes in our light body in 5G. So this is more or less what the Kiran aspect is.
And we'll talk more about how an attunement, we do these attunements at the end of the teleconference.
Well,
But is there anything else you want to talk about with Kiran, or should we jump over to...
I think we should jump over to Orion.
Now, there's an before we go straight into Orion, there's an interesting connection that I'd like to make between Kiran and Orion. Now, these are two separate stellar codes. However, they almost completely overlap each other in the night sky, and therefore we are doing the attunements together, basically to make it easier for us. It's a good deal. What happens is for this particular stellar code, that there's two separate attunements, which will consist of a total of six empowerments. It's an interesting package, but the other way they tie together is not just in the night sky at the same time, but that if you take a look at the angel, if you go into, or study angelology or have read much of the Book of Enoch or some of these other things, you'll find that the angel associated with Kiran happens to be Zadkiel. Zadkiel is one of the archangels.
He's one of the seven big archangels.
Yeah, he's one of the seven big archangels. His name is Righteousness of God. And it's interesting how he ties in as a co-commander or a co-ruler of the different...
Archangels
and realms of heaven. But what he does is one of his primary functions is to guard the pathway between the two royal stars of Aldebaran and Sirius, and which happened to go right through the belt of Orion. So the guardian of the pathway through Orion happens to be the archangel associated with Kiran. And that's another way that these two tie very well together, because Orion deals with, among other things, with the Akashic Records, and tradition states that the Akashic Records are located... or at least symbolically, are located in Orion's belt.
The astral part of it, it's not only the Akashic Records, the Hall of Records. The Hall of Records, it's a different concept than the records itself. The Hall of Records are pathways, and the garden of the pathway that leads from Sirius, which was already a stellar code that we had, and Aldebaran, there was already a stellar code we had, and they are perfectly aligned with Orion's belt. And those are the stars that we're going to be working with on the Orion's code. It is in passing through the three stars, Alnilam, Alnitak, and Mintaka.
And Mintaka, yes.
So those are, very interesting stars, because the mythology and the ancient wisdom talks about those three stars as being the three magis that welcome Jesus or welcome the energy of the Christ on earth. Symbolically, the energy of the Christ traverses the universe through Orion and get, filtered in... I would break it broken down in order for us to absorb and receive it. you know, as pranic energy as well. So, as we go to this path of the stars, and we integrate the code of the stellar codes in our extraphysical bodies, we get attuned and we get able to harmonize our energies to answer any gateway. But what we're going to do with this code is we're going to teach you how to harmonize, get attuned to it, and learn how to harmonize as you enter each gateway. At the same time, how to introduce yourself to the gatekeepers. We have a couple of gatekeepers on this pathway. So the stellar code will deal with not only how to access your records, but how to interact with the angels and the gatekeepers, the entities that guards the sacred scrolls. Not only, you know, you can not only access your own scrolls there, but you can also access the story of a certain family or a story of Earth or a planet. Or
your ancestral line.
Or your ancestral line, or even the story of the galaxy. So, but before that, you have to be prepared to face whatever information is going to be disclosed. They will never disclose any information that you're not able to receive. And, you know, even though you may have, like, received an information and spent 5 years, 5 years later, you say, aha, now I know what it means. Only they will pass it to you what you are able to understand. And that's one of the reasons we want to attune you the best way possible so you can access that and really have a safe passage as you go through the pathways of the universe with the stellar codes. That's basically it. Now, we do have an interesting aspect on all of those. The integration of those two stellar codes will require a lot of the people that will do the stellar codes to practice the preliminary exercises, because those are vital for the attunement to be complete and be assimilated in all the levels possible.
Well, for those who haven't participated with the stellar codes yet, there's a guidebook that comes with it that talks about the archetypical journey and the sort of thing we're talking about tonight. And then there is the appendix that comes with that, and those for the people that are actually participating. That includes the symbology or the symbols that are used or syllables. You know, and that's an interesting way to do it. We call them symbols. We also call them syllables, because a syllable essentially is a vibratory signature. You know, you think of a sound. Or chord, that's a vibratory signature, and traditionally that's called a syllable. Now, so what we have with a symbol is basically a visual representation of a vibratory signature, and that's what we're looking at. But there are within the guidebook, there is always a number of exercises that we want people to work on and do, different meditations, different breathing exercises, things like that, because what's important is that you start
incorporating those symbols, because there are actually light codes, and when you will need to have some kind of understanding on how to manage those, because we're going to prepare you to travel to your Akashic records. You will need to shift frequencies to pass through the gateways. You will need to vibrate differently as you go in different routes. You will need to, I would say, to ignite your column of fire if you have to pass through a column, you know, to a gate of fire to get some codes. So those are techniques that are extremely and carefully discriminated in every single one of those books, and how to shift your syntony, you know, your internal dial, to adapt and harmonize to the frequencies of the places that you are going to go. So those are important to be done, because the attunement in itself will attune you to be able to do this. But the reaching of the final objective, of the final goal, has to come with the work. There's nothing we can do.
It's essentially what we do is we give you the key, but you have to step through the door. And this is the spiritual path. Everybody has to do the work involved to raise your level of vibration. People can tell you how to do it, but unless you do it yourself, it's not going to happen. And what the attunement basically does is gives you the tools and the vibratory matrix, if you will, in order to build on it with your practices so that you can do these things.
So this is basically, you know, the overview on the Stellacode of Orion.
Now, we didn't tell any about the mythology of Orion. Do we want to?
Well, Orion was actually an interesting character.
I guess they all are. They wouldn't make it into the stars.
Exactly. He was a giant. A very, what you call, handsome giant, and very violent. He was more than a hunter. He was a hunter, and he was always telling everybody how proud he was that he could kill anything, to the point that he really upset the goddess.
Well, the goddess of the hunt, Artemis, happened to be his lover at one point in time. And you know, talking about, since she's the protector of wild animals and he's bragging about how he can kill them all, she kind of got a little miffed at him and sent something that he wouldn't notice, a scorpion. Funny thing how the scorpion was just up there.
Yeah, they're integrated. Antares, the scorpion, Chiron, the Sagittarius, and Orion. She sent the scorpion to kill it, but she regretted, so she sends the centaur to kill
the
scorpion before he got to Orion. And that's one of the reasons that one of the stars of the stellar codes of Chiron is the star on a point of the arrow that points exactly to the heart of the Scorpio. So we are going to
the last stellar code.
Yeah, it was the last stellar code. So this is a continuation. The stellar code is actually a journey as we open our divine stars and make them vibrate higher and reintegrating codes of light and absorbing new frequencies of light. We expand the consciousness and we go through the enlightened path, opening ourselves to a new level of understanding and to cosmic mind instead of just earthly, you know, human earthly mind. We open our understanding of how the cosmos operate based on old traditions, because, you know, there's not much of new age on the sense of, you know,
most new age teachings essentially take a facet of an ancient teaching or an ageless wisdom and readapt it. And what we do with the stellar codes, or what we do with the Humanity Healing University, is we bring this ageless wisdom to a modern world, but we try to do it in as a complete a fashion as possible. That's why we're not just doing one stellar code. We're doing the whole archetypical journey, because it's through this archetypical journey that you're able to reestablish, you know, your birthright. And
this is how it has been done for millennia here on Earth. All the rites of initiation, all the paths of the schools of mysteries, the initiation in temple in Egypt, in Atlantis, all of them follow a structure of the stars, the calendar of the fixed stars, and the energies of each one of those constellations. Now, before we conclude this part, I just want to clarify one thing. For instance, we're dealing with the stars of Orion. We're actually dealing with this. Each one of those stars is actually a sun, a big celestial body. We are not dealing with the planets, or neither are the planets. So we are not dealing with the energy of the Mintakians. We are not dealing with the energy of Orion, that new age already labeled as evil. You know, there is school of thought on a new age that qualifies every single being from Orion as being artificial intelligence. I really don't entertain much of this thought because there's a lot to do with conspiracy theory, and I don't think that pointing fingers at, you know, this is bad, this is good, this is bad, this is good. It is not good as it is. We are all transforming. We are reintegrating, and this is a really much a duality type of thought. So we are dealing only with the stars, only with celestial beings that are aligned with Christ consciousness and with the law of one.
And so we throw this out because there has been some questions like, ooh, Orion, you guys must be, you know, Illuminati or... No, that just happens to be, you know, the name of the constellation, and this happens to be the stars. Understand that every star has a solar logo, and this is a higher order being. It's like we have our solar logos. These are the entities that we work with, or the energy,
yeah,
essentially, that we work with the stellar codes.
Exactly, like the energy of Cyrus. It's basically energy of the, you know, the basic energy of Christ consciousness. The energy of Aldebaran is energy of Archangel Michael. The energy of Antares, amazingly enough, even though it's in a constellation of Scorpio, is the energy of Archangel Raphael. So as we work with celestial beings, they are incarnated and, you know, stars as suns, we are pretty sure that all this energy is aligned with Christ consciousness.
And I suppose we should mention real briefly that there are three different flames, three different cords of the stellar codes that we're working with. The light maker, the light weaver, and the light warrior. And each of these codes deals with a different facet of it. For instance,
it's a three-trine flame of the heart, because all the stellar codes are anchored in your heart, building through your heart the path back to your soul or your higher self or your monad.
And this essentially, when we, you know, when it all, if you had to boil it down to like a one phrase thing on what the stellar codes do, help you build your personal antikarana. Which is, you know, all of us have a connection between our higher self and our lower self. Coming, it's called the sutrama, or the silver cord. But there is another way or another pathway, and when we build up from the lower self to the higher self, that is called antikarana. And that is ultimately how you become more soul-infused and more self-realized in this plane of existence, is to build back that path. The antikarana.
As you build your antikarana, you reweave your light body on another type of vibration. Because actually, you're not building a light body like most people in New Age think so. We actually have a light body.
You come with it.
Yeah, it comes in a package, you know.
Standard equipment, nothing special.
It's the entire enchilada. You got an ego, you got a physical body, you got a light body. Now, is it the light body developed? Maybe not. And that's the point. The development of light body doesn't mean that you're going to build it. You're going to develop to the point that this light body will be able enough to carry enough light so you can expand and be self-realized in your multidimensional self, because we are multidimensional beings. And you will be self-realized, you know, starting in fifth dimension. Because we were beings conceived to start our journey back home in fifth dimension. We're not going to talk about the fall and fall in third dimension because it's another different story.
Yeah.
But we're going to...
That'll be covered under one of the courses we do in Humanity Healing that's open to everybody in the university.
All right.
But the one of the things that when we talked about everyone coming tonight and joining us, and I hope we've got a lot of healers out in the audience tonight, because this is really a special stellar code for
healers,
you know, the wounded healer. I think all of us that do healing identifies in some way with Chiron, because we all have something in our lives that motivated us to become healers, and usually that is a wound that we have dealt with on some level. But one of the common questions I get from people who do healing, for instance, you know, I do Reiki before I started with this, you know, some of the other things. That was the first step on my path was learning Reiki, and you know, the question is well, you know, can I channel more energy or do this sort of thing? And the analogy that I like to use is that, you know, the way when we get attuned for Reiki, I always said was it's kind of like a garden hose, that and the energy, the divine energy that flows is the water coming out of the hose. Now, we can all do this. You know, everything can heal, can channel divine energy. It's just a question of how much. And what happens is when we have an attunement with like, is you think of your sutrama coming down from your higher self, which is the channel in which the divine energy flows, as a garden hose. And if it's been laying out in the yard and got all kinked up, there's not going to be a whole lot of water coming out of it. So what an attunement does is kind of straightens your hose so that you can flow more water. Now, what we do with Antakarana is we're building back a channel or a conduit to your soul. But a fully developed Antakarana is, in, if you want to think of this and visualize this, is more about the diameter of your head as opposed to about the diameter of your thumb. So what happens is, can I flow more energy? Well, think of the difference. We're not talking about a hose here. We're not talking about a garden hose. We're talking about a fire hose.
What we're talking about actually is the building of the internal column of light through the alignment of chakras, the alignment, the oxytonal alignment, which is the oximundi and the oxycelli. We're building our internal column of light. Now, everybody knows that, you know, even is in the Bible, that the body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. There's much more knowledge in this phrase that
people realize.
We all were built to be columns of light. In every single temple, you need columns to hold the temple. So all of us here, our ultimate goal, doesn't matter what is your purpose in life, what you came here to do, your ultimate purpose is to reignite your internal stars in order to be a complete pillar of light on the temple of the divine. Whatever you are going to be serving, and I talk about serving not as a servant, but as a server. I'm not talking about slaves. I'm not talking about anybody in lesser condition, but I'm talking about somebody in a condition to respond of the divine plan with full capability, energetically and conscious ways and, you know, in light ways to respond to this commitment. So we all, you know, our main goal is to develop and be the column of light. And that's where the stellar codes come in, because we get back our identity as stars of, you know, we all are stars of the sky. Every man and a woman is a star. It's in a...
That's an old tradition.
Yeah, it's an old tradition. And so is above, so, you know, below, so is below. But think about it. The very phrase of your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit has a deeper meaning than most people understand. So, well, we go through this in very much in detail and how to develop each one of the points.
It is. And what she's talking about with this, you know, the type of thing is like...
there are 12 stellar codes. And each one of the 12 stellar codes is designed to touch another 12 points, which is, on the end of the stellar codes, we would have activated at least 144 points, more points of light in your matrix, and this is what we want. I will not say necessarily, because this is like We actually don't say this openly, but the Stella Code
is... Right now.
Yeah, well, but the Stella Code is a pathway to understand and to practice in a very concrete and real way to practice the rituals and exercise of ascension, even though we don't say that we are an ascension school. Because, I myself personally think that ascension is a sub-product of this. You know, I think that just the possibility to interact with higher beings and be participant and be reintegrated in the fabric of the cosmos, it's more important than ascend. I really don't care if I ascend or not, you know. But most people do, so it's fine.
You know, and some of this is semantics. You know, ascension is, I mean, you have people that ascended like Jesus and Buddha, and it's very obvious when they ascend, because they ascend in physical format up to the heavens. You have people that ascend, but you think of ascension more as becoming a self-actualized or self-realized individual, and that's typically how we do it, or how we discuss it. But it's you know, you're talking about as far as this thing. It's interesting. You mentioned the Enlightened Path before. That was a very old and very ancient name for the Milky Way.
Yes.
But we're going to go ahead, I think, and should we open it up to
questions?
To
yes.
Questions.
And we go from there.
And let me.
We talk too much. I can talk forever.
We can go on about this for some time, because there is so much information. And it's amazing how it all connects. If you actually sit down and start connecting the dots between things, how much of it all ties together. And for instance, you know, looking at Chiron and at Orion, and, you know, the fact that, yeah, there is a connection. There's actually a couple of them, but you wouldn't have realized that from the surface. But anyway, I'm starting to babble on also. I'm going to hit star 7 and try to get us to where people can ask questions. Bear with me a second.